This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Heart Greens. Helping to support healthy blood pressure and circulation just became hassle-free. Introducing Heart Greens, the functional food that you drink using the same dark leafy greens recommended by both the DASH and Mediterranean diets. Get a free canister of Heart Greens with your first order and a 100% money-back guarantee. Heart Greens even guarantees you'll love the taste. Call 800-951-8940. That's 800-951-8940. Or visit IntelligentGreens.com. That's IntelligentGreens.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to cover a subject which I think you'll find quite fascinating. It's the subject of medical marijuana. This is especially appropriate in wake of our election results, in which several new states ratified more liberal access laws to medical marijuana and recreational marijuana. And many may not recognize that this is actually a burgeoning field within medicine. And there are medical applications in terms of marijuana and its related byproducts. So today we're going to talk to an expert. She is someone who specializes as a medical marijuana expert. She's Dr. Rechna Patel, and she's from California. She practices in Walnut Creek. She has a clinic out there which actually specializes in dispensing marijuana and its derivatives to patients. And she is a graduate of Touro University College of Osteopathic Medicine. She's a DO, a Doctor of Osteopathic Medicine. So welcome to Intelligent Medicine, Dr. Patel. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you for having me on the show.
Well, of course, the first question I'd have to ask is, how did you end up in the field of medical marijuana?
So, funny story. I actually found, I was browsing around, just aimlessly browsing around on Craigslist, probably looking for something free, because they always have some like cool free stuff on there. So I found an ad that said medical marijuana doctor needed. And that moment, it sparked my curiosity. So I started looking into the field. Then what I did was I started looking into the research. And I spent a good year just reading, you know, research study upon research study. Now, at the same time, my background's in emergency medicine. I was going through training. And there were a couple cases that sat really heavy with me. One was almost having to resuscitate a 10-year-old who had overdosed on OxyContin. Another was a patient who twice was admitted to the ICU, near 90% rate of mortality. Pretty much that means she was, you know, about 90% close to death both times. And both times it was because she had overdosed on opioids. And lo and behold, I had seen her a third time in the emergency room after these two incidences. And guess what she wanted? She was seeking more opioids. So that definitely made me question, you know, like, what the heck is going on? In that moment, I felt like a glorified drug dealer. Mm-hmm. Third situation was doing my toxicology rotation. And basically, this entire rotation, I dealt with overdoses on either over-the-counter or prescription medications. And so, you know, I kind of stepped back and questioned, what the heck am I doing? The very medications that I'm prescribing are killing people, or coming close to killing people. And so it was really interesting. So, you know, on the one hand, this was going on. On the other hand, I was doing this research on medical marijuana. And what I saw was that it had tremendous potential to treat chronic pain. Obviously, from my experiences, I knew that opioids were not the solution when it came to treating chronic pain. I think they certainly have their role when treating acute pain, but it's really not meant to be a medication used to treat chronic pain because it has such a high potential for addiction. And so, you know, you need clinical experience. So there isn't, and there wasn't at that point, a formal training program in the area of medical marijuana. So what I decided to do was work at a medical marijuana clinic out in California. Now, the industry certainly had some shady roots, for lack of a better term. I definitely found myself working at a clinic where the pressure was on to just churn out cards. And that's not what I was there for.
When you say churn out cards, in other words, people who are seeking authorization to obtain marijuana. So it's like maybe there was some an element of, because it wasn't yet legal in California, maybe now that's changed, they just wanted to get an excuse to obtain marijuana for probably recreational mm-hmm. purposes, and they came up with some sort of medical, you know, rationalization, but it's a little bit of a phony baloney situation.
Right, exactly. And the medical system in California is pretty lax, so it allowed for that. So in any case, I spent a year gaining tons of clinical experience using this medication. And then I decided I'm going to start my own practice and, you know, do my work with integrity, where I'm actually sitting patients down and walking them through how to use it. So, you know, they're not getting high off of it. They don't have to smoke it. They don't develop a tolerance to it. They don't get addicted to it. So I've been doing that. I've had this practice now. I'm in my third year.
So in effect, you're sort of a pioneer in this regard, because the field is ill-defined. You've had to sort of make things up as you go along and look at the research, work with patients, gain experience, and create new protocols.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. That's pretty much what the whole process was. So a lot of it was also even going back to the fundamentals that you learned in medical school, you know, like when it comes to pharmacology, knowing, you know, what's the significance of a half-life? What's the significance of, how the medication gets processed, you know, how long it's going to last in the system, sort of thing. So sort of had to go back to that, the basic sciences from first and second year of med school.
Treating marijuana like a true pharmacological intervention, not like a, you know, something that you sit around with friends and inhale.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so what conditions is it beneficial for? What types of patients are you seeing in your clinic in Walnut Creek, California?
So, you know, in California, what's nice is that we're not restricted in terms of the medical conditions that mm-hmm. we can recommend medical marijuana for.
Yeah, in New York, we actually have some permission to prescribe medical marijuana, but doctors have to go through very strict certification, and then there are only certain specific conditions for which it is applicable. Certain pain conditions, I think ulcerative colitis, mm-hmm. you know, but if you fall outside those parameters, no way, can you get it.
Right. So in California, what's nice is that because it's, again, there's more freedom as a physician to use my own discretion, I have found that the vast majority of patients, the top three medical conditions that I see are chronic pain, a wide variety of chronic pain conditions, and I can go into that, the details in a second, mm-hmm. but insomnia and anxiety. Those are the three most common conditions that I end up treating. Within the category of chronic pain, I see a lot of patients with arthritis, with fibromyalgia, with back pain, typically from degenerative disc disease, or if they've had some sort of, you know, herniated discs causing sciatica, for instance. So those are the most common conditions that I end up treating.
So pain conditions, clearly. Are there any age limits in terms of application of medical marijuana, according to law or according to your own medical judgment?
No to both. In the state of California, as long as I can treat those under the age of 18, as long as there's a parent or legal guardian present, and I myself have treated patients under that age. A lot of between the ages of 15 and 18, the main diagnosis I'm treating is ADHD. And also,
hang on for a second. That sounds like, if I could use the expression, bass ackwards, because it is thought that pot, you know, has a sort of a, a demotivational effect on young kids, and a brain-addling effect. So that's paradoxical, that patients with attention deficit disorder may experience focus and calm when they take a marijuana or a derivative.
Yes, let me explain why. Sure. A lot of it has to do with the chemicals in the marijuana plant itself. Now, much of what we've seen in the media, many of the studies that have been conducted, the focus of the studies have been this chemical known as THC, okay? But there are numerous other chemicals in the plant. The other chemical that the plant makes in high concentrations is known as CBD.
Cannabidiol.
Okay. And plants can be bred to make different amounts of these chemicals. So you can pretty much control what goes in your body and what ultimate effect it's going to have on you. Now, my patients with ADHD, obviously they benefit more from CBD. ADHD sort of falls in under the general umbrella of anxiety disorders, right? In terms of the research that's been done on anxiety, what they found is that marijuana actually interacts with one of the receptors for in the serotonin pathway. Okay, so that may be one of the reasons why it's helping ADHD. But you have to be very, particular in what you're selecting. Now, the other thing is dosing. Okay, that amotivational syndrome, is it called a syndrome? I don't know what. Yeah, that tends to occur if you're overdoing the marijuana. You're falling now into the toxic range of dosing for the medication. And what I focus on is staying within that therapeutic range where you're getting the medical benefits, but you're not getting the toxic effects of it. And dosing has a lot to do with that. And then also frequency of use as well. Okay, so because it's a fat-soluble medication, it sticks around in your system, so you don't have to take it every day. And again, that's another way to avoid having those side effects, like the amotivational syndrome that you mentioned.
And is the way in which it's imbibed via smoking, or is it via some kind of liquid solution?
So you have several options. Now, I generally never recommend that my patients smoke.
Okay. I'm glad to hear it, because there's a lot now about the potential for inhaling toxins and respiratory problems in chronic marijuana smokers. And we have reason to believe that, while maybe not as bad as cigarettes, it's burning plant material. So analogously, we'd see some trouble.
Yeah, so bronchitis is what the studies show. Patients who smoke marijuana chronically are more prone to getting bronchitis as well as COPD. So those are the two main conditions that they see from chronically smoking marijuana. Now, there are many different options when it comes to using marijuana other than smoking. So let me walk you through them. Sure. There are edibles, okay, and these are typically chocolates, gummies, that are basically it's the chemicals in marijuana that are extracted in some sort of oil, and then they mix it into the recipe for the food product. Mm-hmm. Okay,
like marijuana brownies kind of thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And actually they're making very nowadays healthy versions of these edibles as well. So you'll find things that are, sugar-free, gluten-free. So it can sort of cater to your specific diet if you have any sort of dietary restrictions. Mm-hmm. Now, the next thing is tinctures. So tinctures are basically the chemicals in marijuana. They can be extracted in a base of alcohol, oils. Typically, it's coconut oil. Or glycerin. And these are drops that you can use under your tongue sublingually. Another method is it can also be used. There are rectal formulations. Mm-hmm. There are also vaginal formulations. There is a method of inhalation known as vaporization, but I usually advise my patients to use this method with caution because there are products that sort of took root recreationally, and these are products that are extracted in solvents like butane. A lot of times they can be industrial grade solvents, right? Mm-hmm. Because process took root on the streets, and so that's probably what was being used. And the industry is not well regulated, so we right. don't know what grade solvent is being used currently. So you do want to stay away from those sort of products. But there's a wide variety of methods that can be used to administer the medical marijuana.
Mm-hmm. Now, a fundamental question is, when you apply medical marijuana to a certain medical condition, I think in a popular mind, this is for people who are, you know, have some very far gone conditions. They're miserable. They may be terminal. They may be cancer patients who are nauseous all the time, have lost their appetite, or maybe just people who want to escape reality because of the end stage of their condition, advanced, whatever, MS, very serious problems. But is the rationale for using medical marijuana merely to relieve suffering and, in effect, sedate the patient? Or is it to actually can it have a beneficial effect on the course of disease via perhaps an anti-inflammatory effect or some immune modulating effect or something like that?
Both. It depends on the condition. For the most part, I haven't found that marijuana really gets to the root of resolving, the root of the problem. A lot of it is more symptom control. And it is beneficial for conditions where conventional medications haven't quite cut it. Examples being, arthritis, for instance, mm-hmm. fibromyalgia is another example. And a lot of these patients, they're starting off with analgesics, with pain medications, then they're moving on to antidepressants, then they're moving on to anti-seizure medications now, and they're, experiencing side effects. So they've kind of spun their wheels in the conventional system. They may have even tried alternatives like acupuncture, massage, et cetera, and haven't had any benefit in that realm either. So typically what I commonly hear is Dr. Patel, this is my last resort. Mm-hmm. So I just want to give this a try and hopefully it'll work. So that's what I commonly see, in terms of patients.
I'm sorry, I've seen posts, and the internet is a very unreliable place, but I've seen posts with claims that medical marijuana may have anti-cancer effects, that it may have anti-inflammatory effects. According to your research, is there any truth to those claims?
Certainly when it comes to anti-inflammatory effects. What I found based on research done in mice is that it affects the production of cytokines. And so for those to put this in simpler terms for those that aren't doctors, cytokines are a chemical that during the inflammatory process are communicating, that are helping cells to communicate with each other. And what they found in mice is that marijuana actually impacts these cytokines and in the process helps to reduce the inflammation that's going on. Okay, so that's one way. Mm-hmm. Now the second way is that it impacts T regulatory cells. Okay, mm-hmm. So basically T regulatory cells are cells that are in the body that respond to it prevents the making of antigens against your own body. So
they sort of put the brakes on an out of control immune response.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So that's what the marijuana is found to do. It activates T regulatory cells. And with the cytokines, it suppresses the productions of the cytokines. The other thing that it does is that it causes apoptosis of immune cell populations that are causing specifically an autoimmune attack. So what, you know, so we have to see
that
now
would be
this translates
for our listening
over.
Audience, that would be a programmed cell death. In other words, to the extent cells become immortalized, that's dangerous. The body needs to clean itself up by programming cells to, in effect, self-immolate and do away with themselves and curtail out-of-control situations, potentially cancer, potentially an inflammatory reaction. So I guess that's where that may apply.
Yeah. So this is, you know, I mean, I think this is significant information to note that, you know, at a cellular level, the impact that marijuana can have. Now we just have to see, you know, does the research in mice translate over to humans mm-hmm. as well? Now, clinically, what have I seen? When I treat conditions that have a significant inflammatory component to it, right? I have seen that clinically that marijuana helps to reduce the inflammation. Okay, so psoriasis, for instance, let me just give that as an example. These patients get plaques on their skin. And then a lot of it is due to inflammation that's going on in the body. Now, if patients can, what a lot of patients do is that they apply marijuana topically. This is actually one of the methods I forgot to mention. But marijuana is extracted in an oil which is mixed in with like shea butter or coconut oil, and you can apply it to the skin. And these patients have reported saying that it helps to get rid of the plaque and the inflammation that's going on the skin. Same with arthritis. You know, a lot of my patients use topicals, and they apply it to, you know, the areas that are affected, like the hands, for instance, and it helps to reduce the pain. A lot of the pain is caused by inflammation that's going on. So what's interesting is that to read this research and, on the other hand, see what's going on clinically in my patients. And then the missing link now, you know, is, well, let's, you know, do studies, where the environment, you know, where the factors are well controlled. There aren't as many confounding factors. And so we can actually make that conclusion.
Okay, well, you've laid the groundwork for our discussion of medical marijuana very nicely here. In part two, I want to get into some specifics, talking about certain specific conditions that may be amenable to medical marijuana. And we're not talking about smoking joints here. We're talking about highly standardized extracts of various combinations of THC, but particularly CBD, which is an intriguing chemical. When we return, more of our discussion with Dr. Rachna Patel, who is a physician specializing in medical marijuana in Walnut Creek, California. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.